What's up, everybody, and welcome to Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of cinema. I am one of your merry hosts, Jonathan McWhorter, joined by my beautiful co-host, JP Payton.
Just call me Scrooge.
Yes, he's Scroogey because he's got some loogies.
Yeah, all the looges.
Yeah, he's got the sinuses going on right now, son. It's the Christmas episode. We watched some Christmas movies, five of them this week.
Yeah,
we watched a couple of different ones, and you forgot to watch. Well, didn't have time to watch one, so we'll touch on that.
We had a miscommunication
on Family Man.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Santa Claus.
No, it's okay. We'll just swap out those two movies this week. Yeah, we had one miscommunication, then JP just missed the most important Christmas movie for this week. That's okay. Yeah. For most important, because you watched Violent Night. Anyway, so we're breaking down just really briefly. It's not going to be like a deep dive of these Christmas films, but just some brief discussion, brief synopsis of the films that we watched, kind of what we thought about them, what worked, what didn't, and how they hold up. What makes them good? What makes them special? So I just say we just jump right in.
Let's do it.
And let's just get crazy. I'll start. I'll go Christmas with the Cranks. Man, this is Abby wanted to kick off this week, so I ruined it, started off, because originally the Santa Claus was on the list, and Abby's like, well, I don't want to watch blah, 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 blah film. Can we start off with Christmas with the Cranks or Elf? And I love Elf every time I watch it, but I never want to watch it. It's kind of like one of those.
I feel that way too.
But I like it when it's on. But I was like, no, let's do Christmas with the Cranks. So a brief synopsis. This is based off the John Grisham book, Skipping Christmas. No ho ho. Luther Crank is fed up with the commerciality of Christmas. He decides to skip the holiday and go on a vacation with his wife instead. But when his daughter decides the last minute to come home, he must put together a holiday celebration. So this is a Tim Allen, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Dan Aykroyd led film with some nice little cameos from like Cheech Martin, Jake Busey. There's another one in here somewhere, but doesn't matter. Your big ones are Jamie Lee Curtis, Tim Allen, and Dan Aykroyd. And it's exactly what it sounds like. Their daughter goes to Joy's Peace Course. Tim Allen and them decide they're going to skip Christmas, save the money, go on a cruise. Daughter decides to come back last second. They pissed everybody off in the town by being kind of scroogey about things, and then they all have to rally together. So I had this rated at 3.5 stars because I watched it last year, bumped it from 3 to 3.5. This year I bumped it back down from 3.5 to 3. This movie has some pretty chuckle out loud moments. The Botox scene is great. The fish tacos comment is hilarious. The spray tan booths or the tanning bed booths are funny. There's a lot of comedic moments. And if you've never seen this movie before and you're... If you've never seen it before at any age, it's funny. If you've never seen it before and you're in your 40s or higher, you're going to think this movie's really funny.
This is a boomer classic.
Yeah. And the older I get, the more I relate to it too. So it's funnier. And I just am a sucker for Tim Allen. But for me, and you know, it's a 2004 and it's got the heart of 2004 in it. It doesn't try to be anything. It's not. It's just a straight, very, very simple comedic Christmas hijinks film. And that's all I need a Christmas movie to be. Tim Allen is great in this film. Jamie Lee Curtis is great in this film. Dan Aykroyd is great in this film. Everybody else, you have a pretty harsh fall off after those three. There's some really lackluster performances. But as a whole, they carry this film. That's all you need. If you don't have this as a Christmas staple, this definitely is a Christmas staple. I mean, 3 stars seems low, but a lot of these Christmas films are going to be low because they serve a purpose of being a Christmas film. You know what I mean? They're not here to blow your mind. And Christmas with the Cranks is fun. It's just a fun, lighthearted comedic film.
I'll be honest with you. I gave this 3 stars, but I really didn't want to.
Oh, you watched this one?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the only one I did not watch
was Family Man.
Yes.
Okay.
And I mistakenly watched The Santa Claus.
Right.
So
did you watch this one by yourself?
I watched it with Caitlin.
What did Caitlin think of it?
She thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Not really impressed.
Had either of you ever seen it?
Caitlin habitually like says she hasn't seen something in like the first 15 minutes. Like, she's like, oh yeah, I remember this.
Yeah.
And like pieces it together as we go. So you love Tim Allen.
I love Tim Allen, bro.
I don't think I like Tim Allen.
That's what it is.
I love him as Buzz.
Yeah.
But watching him it is a task.
See, maybe that's why I just grew up.
I grew up with Home Improvement.
Yeah, I did
for
too.
Some reason, I like that version of him better. It feels like he's playing more true to form in this movie, though, which I just kind of find it's grating. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize this was a John Grisham book, though.
Yeah, it's based on the book Skipping
and
Christmas.
That, honestly, that makes me want to bump it down to 2.5 because as an adaptation, this feels extremely lacking.
Yeah. I've never read it.
All the funny moments did not have Tim Allen in them for me. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee Curtis surprisingly carried this.
Is his fish taco moment didn't do anything for you? He goes, no. You know what? Those fish tacos didn't sell my stomach well. Matter of fact, I don't think I'm going to do that again. Every time he says that, I don't think I'm going to do that again. I about fall out. It tickles me every time. And the same goes for me, double. That's quoted in our household all the time. Same goes for me, double. And when he tries to give that toast at the end and the Botox scene. I'm a fan of Tim.
Yeah, I could see a different version of this movie to where it's almost kind of like played off like a horror to where they have announced to this neighborhood that they're not doing Christmas.
Yeah.
And then it's slowly like the strangers or like us, like they're creeping into the house to like get Frosty.
Oh yeah.
Because Frosty's trapped in the basement. And they're trying to get him out. That would be effective. It'd be funny. Like you could make that funny. But yeah, knowing that it's a John Grisham movie kind of makes a little bit more sense. It doesn't feel like it was executed well, and it feels like Tim Allen gets in the way of a lot of it.
So. See, I don't feel that way, but I do feel like there's some very shoddy film work in this film.
Oh yeah.
Some really bad editing.
2004.
There's like one moment that I noticed in this where the wreath on the door is up one clip.
Oh,
2 seconds later it's down, and then 2 minutes later it's back up. Like just some stuff like that. And then like whoever plays the lady, what is her name? When Bev Shields gets cancer a second time and she goes to cry, I want to punch a hole in the wall. The acting's so bad.
It's Bev. She's got the cancer again.
Yeah. Oh, golly. It's so bad. And then freaking someone needs to punch Dobby in the mouth. The freaking, he pisses me off every time I watch it.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, I mean, like I said, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but, you know, as a whole, it is a serviceable Christmas movie. It's definitely better than what you're going to find in, like, Hallmark or Lifetime or anything like that, even, like, modern ones. Like, it does its job.
Yeah, it's on the list. You don't, you just put it on.
You just put it on, you watch it, and you get some enjoyment out of it, or you don't. Like, we watch it every year, like, the opening scene, like, me and Abby quote the whole opening scene, like, we love it, like, where she's like, he goes and gets the white, or he goes, they didn't have any white chocolate. She goes, well, did you ask Rex? Who's Rex? The butcher. He goes, you know, as odd as it sounds, I didn't think about asking the butcher where the chocolate was.
Well, and see, in that moment,
but I will.
In that moment, like, Jamie Lee Curtis is the funny character in that. Whereas for you, it's like Tim Allen's playing the beat, like the, I agree. Christmas with the Cranks.
You watched another Tim Allen movie.
I did, yeah.
So wait, before I move on, is this one that you would, so eventually in the future or whatever, you know, or like if you started a family, is this going to be one like you add to your holiday staple? Because me and Abby were like with Violet are trying to figure out like next 3 to 4 years when we start doing live action films regularly.
No, I don't think so because there's not enough, sounds weird because it is family centric, but there's not. It's based around a family, but it does not feel like a family movie, if that makes sense.
See, I'm the opposite camp. I think this is definitely a solidified one for our family.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, one that I do believe is, whether you actually think it's good or not, is another.
Who doesn't think this movie's not good?
I don't know. I mean, it's very average.
No.
We are talking about the Santa Claus, though. 1994's... version where Tim Allen basically plays a divorced father who is, works at a toy company. He's one of the top salesmen. And on Christmas Eve, whenever his son comes to stay with him, once he has put him to sleep, he hears something goes bump in the night to find Santa on his roof or a man on his roof. Doesn't know that it's Santa. But
scares him.
Santa falls, dies, and Tim Allen basically picks up a card.
Or yeah. Unknowingly.
Yeah. Unknowingly takes his jacket or his coat, which therein solidifies him as the new Santa Claus.
He just didn't read the Santa Claus.
Yes.
Which is a brilliant play on words I did not realize till I was older.
Yeah.
The Santa Claus. Like, yeah. It's, yeah.
And so he has to deliver all these presents at night. Unwillingly ends up at the North Pole to where he is debriefed. Basically said he has 11 months to get his affairs in order before he is brought up for the show.
Yep.
So spends all those 11 months basically slowly growing into
Santa,
the big red man.
Yeah.
He's basically accused of being insane because his son Charlie, right, is his son's name.
Charlie, he believes that all of it's real.
He believes that he's Santa, and it sounds totally delusional
and it's important to know that he's divorced.
Yes, he's divorced. His mother, who's remarried, recently married to Neil, who is
a psychiatrist.
Yes, psychiatrist. I mean, we would talk about
stick in the mud.
We would
baby.
Talk. Christmas movie villains. Neil's up there.
See, that's funny you said that, because I meant to respond, because I don't even know. I meant to tell. I didn't even tell Abby too. I meant to. Neil's fine. I don't like Neil, but I don't hate Neil.
I mean, there to the very end, you know, to not like Neil.
Yeah.
Which
I've never seen $1 million.
And so, yeah, Neil being a psychiatrist, like, is trying to psychoanalyze the whole situation, basically pushes the mom to go after full custody. Well, she gets it. What's his name? Chris?
The elf?
Scott. Scott Calvin.
Oh, Scott. Yeah.
Yeah. Scott has to go to the North Pole, deliver all the presents, and basically Charlie stows away. And while he is delivering all the presents, there is a full APB out on trying to get Scott and to catch Scott because he has captured Charlie. Police capture him. And I don't know why I'm doing a full synopsis.
You're like breaking this movie down.
Yeah, but I'm breezing through it, man.
You are. You're moving.
We're moving.
I just realized that Judge Reinhold, who plays.
Yeah.
Not Nick. What is the psychiatrist's name?
Neil.
Is in a Nicolas Cage movie together as a supporting actor. Wow. And this is the cover of it.
Oh, that's awful.
I need to that watch mustache. This movie ASAP.
Oh, wow. So basically, in the movie, Scott finally convinces his family that he is Santa, which basically fixes the fact that he's not going to have custody. He'll have custody now. And all is well with the world. Scott goes to be Santa, and Christmas lives on. What do we think? What works for you in this movie?
Everything. Everything.
Everything works for you?
I see what I have this movie rated as. I have this movie at a solid 4 stars.
The thing that I like about this movie is how completely honest it is about kind of like the divorced parent side of it.
Yeah.
The dad ruining the dinner and then going to Denny's on Christmas Eve is absolutely amazing.
Dawson's review sums it up.
What's that?
Scott Calvin ran so Luther Crank could fly.
Okay.
No, for real, like, this movie is just, I mean, I grew up watching this every Christmas from a very young age, so I have a very, 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 very soft spot for this film, so I don't really have anything negative to say about it ever anyway. I do have it at 4 stars. For me, the cast is all I thought great. I really think that David Krumholtz and Jake Johnson are the same person. I've never seen them in the same room together.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that. I mean, tell me that could not be.
It's pretty close. Yeah.
Jake Johnson and, you know, just fluctuating weight for roles, you know,
speed.
Well, he's not big in this movie.
No.
So,
not at all.
No, yeah, I really like it. I really like it. I mean, it's fun. It's genuinely got some funny moments. I mean, for 1994. But, I mean, it's got some funny moments that hold up still to this day. The effects for what it is aren't bad for 1994. They don't hold up. It's not jarring in a bad way. Unlike Cranks, this doesn't have, to me, any editing issues that I can look back and be like, wow, that's just lazy. You know what I mean?
And even like going back, the little Easter egg of all the elves are like in the real world scenes.
Yep.
Just kind of like Haunting of Hill House, like level of just they're there. You don't see them, but which they're there.
Ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was, really funny.
It was really good. And like I said, the where I was going with that, like to the Cranks, honestly, just seems like lazy editing. And like, how do you not catch the wreath thing? There's not any of that really in this film. Now, I haven't watched it since last year. I'll watch it this week, but I've seen it, gosh, 100 times. I find this film to be a well-made film overall. Yeah. Like, it's very well-made. It's well-written. I mean, it's a kid's movie. It's got some adult humor. Not, like, raunchy humor, but, like, it's going to go over some kids' heads. But it's got a pretty good heartwarming, like, era. I remember thinking last year, watching, like, wow, this is kind of, the older I get, this is a little more heartwarming to me. So, you know, I really like the Santa Claus. I don't really love the Santa Claus 2 or the Santa Claus 3. And I haven't watched the Santa Clauses. My parents are knee deep in that right now, but I have not. So
heard that Tim Allen has been a butthole on the sets of the Santa Clauses.
Why?
I mean, just.
He can't be that big of one because they keep having him come back. You just signed another two-picture deal. I think
that's part of it though, the ego. It's very obvious. Christmas of the Cranks, kind of watching Christmas of the Cranks. I watched it after the Santa Clauses, and it was almost like,
wait, you watched the Santa Clauses too?
I watched the Santa Claus. Sorry. Oh. I watched it before Christmas with the Cranks.
Yeah.
When I was watching Christmas with the Cranks, it was obvious that Tim Allen was casted for this role because he is personified. Like, he is related to Christmas with a lot of viewers.
Yes.
Mind. So, it's just kind of funny.
You ever seen Wild Hogs?
Yeah.
Great.
I mean, I don't remember everything like it looked.
I need to watch his stand-up, Tim Allen. He's got apparently a pretty raunchy stand-up out there somewhere. But anyway, is this one that you will throw into the Christmas staple?
Yes, absolutely.
Same for me. Which one do you want to do next?
You pick, man. Dealer's choice.
Let's do Bad Santa 2.
Okay. Let's get it over with.
No, this movie's funny.
Well, then talk about it, man.
So this is a sequel to Bad Santa. Have you ever seen Bad Santa?
I had not.
Oh, well, dang.
Yeah. You said, why don't you just watch that too? No, I'm not going to.
Bad Santa's better than Bad Santa 2, but Bad Santa 2 is funny. The one-liners in this film,
it's not my type of humor.
Too raunchy for you?
I mean, I enjoy raunchy, but
sex joke after sex joke after sex joke.
I know, but I saw
this in theaters with Ben and David, and we were both like pissing our pants.
I believe
this film.
I believe that
together. So Bad Santa 2 is the sequel to Bad Santa. Came out in 2016. Fueled by cheap whiskey, greed, and hatred, Willie Soke teams up with his angry little sidekick, Marcus, to knock off a Chicago charity on Christmas Eve. Along for the ride is chubby and cheery Thurman Merman, a 250-pound ray of sunshine who brings out Willie's sliver of humanity. Issues arise when the pair are joined by Willie's horror story of a mother who raises the bar for the gang's ambitions while somehow lowering the standards of criminal behavior. So this is Billy Bob Thornton, obviously, is back reprising his role as Willie. Kathy Bates entering the fray as his mom. Brett Kelly reprising his role as Thurman Merman. And Tony Cox is back as Marcus Skidmore. I had this at 3 stars. I lowered it from 3.5 to 3 because I hadn't seen it since I saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
And while it did lose some of its shine and luster, I still had a really good time and laughed out loud. I mean, like, laughed out loud 8 or 9 times in this movie.
I can believe that.
Like, I sent you the whole Felch thing last night. Like, me and Garrett have been talking about the Felch thing forever. Like, wow, that's crazy.
You have.
And then I watched this. It wasn't a blip on my radar in 2016. That scene last night, like,
it was,
oh,
the
my
seed
gosh.
Was the seed was planted.
Yeah. Then. I was like, my gosh, that's insane. But no, like, it is a Christmas movie. It is, but it is also hard R raunch comedy.
Yeah.
And to me, I love that both of those things can exist in the same world. It's super simple. It's not, and it's so crazy that this is the same director who did Mean Girls, Freaky Friday, He's All That, Just Like Heaven, Mr. Popper's Penguins. Spiderwick Chronicles, Ghost of Girlfriends Past. Like, I'm looking at all, they're all family films, and then Bad Santa 2 is literally the one. The one.
Yeah.
That's honestly just jarring. But no, I thought Billy Bob Thornton's performance is good in this film. I thought the movie doesn't have any editing issues, doesn't even have any pacing issues. The plot's just, it's just super simple.
Yeah.
Tower
Heist is better than this?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The better ensemble film.
It is a better ensemble.
Sure. Yes, I'll give it that. It's a
better executed plot.
It's just a better plot.
I mean, the plot in this isn't bad. It's just, it doesn't make sense.
You gotta watch Bad Santa. Maybe I'm thinking full. I have backstory connections to these characters.
I don't know.
Hang on. Let's see. I wonder if, so Bad Santa's got like, it's a 3.2 overall.
Yeah.
Much higher regard. Plus Bernie Mac's character is awesome in that film.
I believe it.
But no, Bad Santa 2 is, it, I haven't watched it in a long time. I probably won't watch it again for a couple of years. It's not one of those ones I need to watch every year. But I do get some really good laughs out of it. Like, Bad Santa 2 is one of those films I just kind of want to sit down, drink a glass of scotch, and like watch it with some buddies.
Yeah.
Like, and laugh at that kind of stuff, you know? But I can understand people not liking it. Like, it's a 3-star film. In terms of merit, it's probably really a 2.5, 2.5, 2-star. But in terms of me just being juvenile in my humor,
yeah,
3.5, 3 or 3-star for me.
It's a 2.5 for me. Not even bad.
You'll never watch this again.
No.
Let's talk about
Jingle All the Way.
Yep, that was it. I couldn't find it. You actually rated this film higher than I anticipated.
Yeah.
So it's got a 2.8 overall. Now, this is one of those ones I grew up watching all the time. This is like one of my favorite Christmas movies. Like, top 3 Christmas movies for me. I love Jingle All the Way. That said, I have it at 3.5 stars. It's not like it's a great movie by any means at all. It's really probably a 3-star film, which is what you gave it.
Yeah.
Anyway, synopsis. 2 dads, 1 toy, no prisoners. Gayest line.
Okay.
Wow. You know, 2 girls, 1 cup.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, meet Howard Langston. I love that this synopsis starts with meet. Meet Howard Langston. Wow. Yeah. This is straight out of 96. Meet Howard Langston, a salesman for a mattress company, is constantly busy at his job. You're my number one customer. And he constantly disappoints his son. After he misses his son's karate exposition, his son tells Howard that he wants for Christmas is an action figure of his son's favorite television hero. There's some bad grammar in here. He tries hard to make it up to him. Unfortunately for Howard, it is Christmas Eve and every store is sold out of Turbo Mine. Now Howard must travel all over town and compete with everybody else to find a Turbo Man action figure. So this film stars Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sinbad, and Phil Hartman. Which Phil Hartman, unsung hero. This film is Ted. Yeah. Ted's great. Yeah, Phil Hartman.
Ted is like a more fleshed out version of Ned.
Flanders?
The Christmas Claus. Or the
wow. Christmas Claus.
Yeah, the Santa Claus.
Ned.
Neil, sorry, Neil.
Neil. Yeah. I see that. So Schwarzenegger, long, you know, that does a pretty good job summing it up. Schwarzenegger is basically Robin Williams from Hook, which I'm watching for so okay. You know, because that's a Christmas movie to me. So I'm gonna watch it and discuss it next week. It's one of my favorite Christmas movies. You've seen Hook, right?
Yeah, it's been a minute, but yeah,
you should watch that. Anyway, Schwarzenegger, because he's absent all the time and doesn't listen, he forgot to get this Turbo Man doll, which is like the equivalent of his Taylor Swift release a limited action figure. It'd be like that. You just wouldn't be able to find it anywhere. So he goes and tries to find it. And in the time he does that, he meets Sinbad, who's a mailman, who's also trying to find the action figure for his son. Yeah. You can find Booster, his sidekick. You can find the villain, but you just can't find Turbo Man. So those two start as friends and then end up as enemies real quick. As they're everybody in that area is trying to find Turbo Man. And he ends up becoming Turbo Man in a parade, getting to save his son Jamie's life, which was a huge surprise that was little Anakin Skywalker. I never put those two together.
Yeah.
Because
I figured that was one of the reasons why you love this movie so much. No, like that weird connection.
This year was the first year I've oh shit, that's Jake Lloyd.
Yeah.
I think Minte have actually logged that before, but I guess it's because we did Star Wars interview and like watching them in the same year. Yeah. Like, oh man, it's Jake Lloyd. was wild. But no, like in the end of this film, you know, he becomes Trouble Man of the Parade, saves Jamie, he gets his doll, he gives it back up to Myron so he can give it to his son. You know, yay, heartwarming moment, lesson learned. But for me, there's just a lot to love about this film. Like the Santa Claus fight where they got with Belushi, that whole thing, that whole scene is fantastic. The hijinks with the cop, every scene gets funnier and funnier and crazier. I love that. Sinbad actually provides a pretty good amount of comic relief here in a zany kind of way. The whole bomb scenario, great. Who's the DJ? The DJ looks so familiar.
I didn't notice him.
Richie Rich. Okay. Maybe. I think the Richie Rich films. But Schwarzenegger, as far as Schwarzenegger goes, these 90s, 80s, 90s movies are known to be his just creme de la creme. You know, he was the biggest star back then. So as all big stars had to do, you had to make your Christmas movie. This is his Christmas movie. His acting isn't as bad as I remembered. It's not good.
Yeah.
But it's not as bad as I remember. I just have a really good time with this. A lot of it's nostalgia, but also it's a fun movie. Like, it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's always light and airy and jokey, but not like forcing jokes at you.
I gave this 3 stars, you said. I think I thought about giving it 3.5, but the parade sequence kind of like, it felt like an exaggerated real life, but that parade scene just...
Yeah, it went too long.
It went like, way too long.
You could have cut out, like him not learning the controls would have been fine, but then him getting stuck in the flag and spinning and spinning and spinning, and then hitting like him blowing through the family's thing, that would have been fine.
Well, just him just flying through...
Yeah.
Minnesota or wherever they're at. Minneapolis.
Chicago.
No, they're in the Mall of America.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. That's why I was surprised. Like, it's weird that this would be where this movie is taking place. But everything leading up to the parade, I really enjoyed it. I thought Sinbad was hilarious.
First time watching this film?
Yeah.
Yeah. Abby hates this film. It's like one of her least favorite movies of all time.
I mean, it's very surface level. Honestly.
Oh, yeah. But that's part of the reason I think I like it.
Yeah.
It's so surface level, but executed well.
Yeah.
And everybody's dedicated to their bit. Which is part of the reason it's so good.
Yeah. The bomb joke.
Oh, great.
Like 94. Like I'm thankful this was made in 94.
Yeah. Well, it's relevant in 94.
It was.
That and Anthrax both.
It was, but... it was hilarious. Enjoyed it.
Yep, I did too. Jingle All the Way, unsung Christmas movie. Although I feel like it's coming around. I feel like I see a lot more people talking about Jingle All the Way nowadays than I used to. Sure. You like this one better than Cranks?
I think so, yeah.
Did Caitlin watch this one?
She did not, no.
Would you watch this one? Think Caitlin would like it?
I think she'd get bored. It's just so hard to
If you've never
read.
Seen it, does this feel like when you're watching it, did you feel nostalgic watching it?
Yeah. Yeah,
like that's how you know a good Christmas is good.
Like the Turbo Man like clips that you see kind of in the beginning.
Power Rangers.
Like, yeah, I was transported back to, you know, Saturday mornings like as a kid.
A Christmas movie's doing its job. Like,
yeah.
And that's why this is always gonna be something I show Violet, because like it just feels like a Christmas movie.
Yeah, and like the mall sequel, like that felt like a mall in the 90s.
And it had the bump, that's not in a movie. It's not nostalgic. It's not 90s. But no, Jingle All the Way is really fun. If you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend watching it. Same director who did Spy Next Door, Snow Dogs, The Flintstones. Makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah.
All of those things track. So last one. For our interview portion is Violent Night, came out last year, starring David Harbour. You better watch out when a team of mercenaries breaks into a wealthy family compound on Christmas Eve, taking everyone inside hostage. The team isn't prepared for a surprise combatant. Santa Claus is on the grounds, and he's about to show why this Nick is no saint. So I watched this in theaters last year, gave it 4 stars.
Yeah, and you raved about it.
Watched it this year. Give it 4 stars. I want to know what you think about this film.
I loved it. It's 4 stars. Caitlin, I watched the last bit of it. with Caitlin because I'd been watching on my iPad because I was making dinner. And when I finished, I threw it up on the TV. And it was whenever the taking over of the house was like happening. And there, some of those first fatalities that Santa Claus throws out, like, really intense, and Caitlin was not vibing with it. But it
like the star in the eye plugging it into the wall,
and it lights it, like he ends up being set on fire. Loved it. There's just some really
the Viking flashbacks.
Yes, like, and you'll talk about this, I'm sure, later. But
well, I'm just gonna read my review because it tracks. Yeah,
go for it.
So yeah. I wrote this December 3rd, 2022. I don't write reviews anymore. Every day, I think I'm tempted to just go write a review for every review I've not written one for, which is starting to hundreds deep. But that sounds like something I would eventually go back and do. But this still tracks. I believe it. So my tagline is ho, ho, holy shit. Okay, so listen and really hear me out on this one because I'm not joking. Violent Night is one of the best Christmas movies I've ever seen since I was a little kid. Track or no? It's violent, yes.
Yeah, but
still captures.
It's a Christmas spirit.
It is.
Yeah, it has elements. It has elements of different Christmas movies,
like Home Alone.
Yeah.
I just wanted to stop there and see. Violent Night and all of its merry, blood-soaked carnage manages to deliver a Christmas miracle that is more nostalgic holiday spirit than the last 10 years of Christmas films combined. Violent Night doesn't shy away from its inspirations, giving us a bludgeoning of Home Alone, a skewering of the Santa Claus, and a thrashing of Die Hard, and finally, an unmerciful hammering skull crusher, if you will, to Elf. What I'm saying is Violent Night paid homage to all these specific films in a not-so-subtle fashion while still standing on its own. Don't ask me how or why, but despite all of its gore and brutality, I found Violent Night to be full of heart, almost endearing. It was Christmas magic. This is another quote from the film. It's Christmas magic. I don't understand it either. Santa. Let's all take our film snob and wannabe critic hats off for a second and bask in the enjoyment and pure spectacle of Violent Night. We're all honest. Like I'm trying to be, I found myself dropping a sleigh load of holy shits from beginning to end. Violent Night is fully a jolly good time. The cinematography in Violent Night isn't inherently impressive or immediately memorable, but as the movie progresses and you allow yourself to be drawn in, the magic behind the camera really begins to pop off the screen. The idyllic snow-laden family mansion was beautifully decorated, each room location seemingly tailored to a different era, making for some visually pleasing and eye-popping, literally, scenes. The violence was gratuitous, the choreography serviceable but campy, all spelling out a new cult classic. The Home Alone montage, though, brilliant. But let's be honest, I wasn't going into Violent Night expecting much from a technical perspective. No one should be, yet I was pleasantly surprised. David Harbour, a few misses in his filmography, Violent Night not being one of those. Harbour was a jolly red menace, tearing his way through each scene with a dour but emboldened performance. It was a fairly one-dimensional performance, but so was the whole film. They knew what they were going for and owned it. Gold stars for both. I did get a lot of Hopper vibes, but that's perfectly fine with me. John Leguizamo was fine here, a little phoned up until the last half of the film, which upon he literally exploded. We won't talk about that. No. That was my Bruno. We don't talk about Bruno, Joe. Ken Gadadjit is here. He channeled some Never Back Down moves, so that's cool. Worthy of a hearty chuckle. Ultimately, this was a David Harbour exhibition, and he carried. Sign me up for Violent Night trilogy if Harbour stays on board, which a year later, you're getting that. Violent Night looks and feels as if Chris Columbus just came off a week-long bender and made a new Christmas film. It's consistently funny, bordering on hilarity at times. It's immensely quotable. It's full of charisma and charm. It's shockingly sentimental and endearing. Violent Night undeniably captures a Christmas wonder. All telltale Chris Columbus staples. But wait, there's more. Santa's dropping F-bombs, impaling, beheading, curb-stomping, skull-bashing, and jingling all the bells of the Naughty List Militia. I don't mean that in a dirty way. Sounded dirty. Man, I've tried to freaking allow these jokes in here. Year ago, I wouldn't write these now like this. Tommy Wirkola made a really fun film here, a divisive but wildly entertaining modern Christmas classic. You can't tell me otherwise. This possibly was the most fun I've had in a theater this year. The showing I went to near this, I guess I have notes here now too. The showing I went to was nearly sold out, and at the end, it got a standing ovation. Great times were had by all. At the end of the film, oh, I forgot about this. At the end of the film, a lady shouted out, quote, "Tim Allen could never." Not sure what that meant, but I love the energy.
Yeah, we know exactly what it means.
Yeah. Bryan Adams could have never envisioned his Christmas time recording to be used in this fashion. I'll never hear it the same. And then Violent Night was made for me. I was a target audience. To quote my man, Timothy Chalamet from Bones and All, I ate it right the fuck up. So.
Yeah, you just love slipping stuff in there.
I don't know what I'm talking about. That's one of my highest ranked reviews.
Yeah.
got 371 on there, or 271 on there.
Wow. I really enjoyed it. I think that pretty much sums it all up.
Yeah. See, I need to write reviews again because those synopsis, that's the breakdown.
They move this pod right along.
Yeah, that's the breakdown right there.
It is.
No, I still hold by every single thing I said in that outside of a couple jokes.
You asked too, like, these other movies that we watched, like, is this on the list? It absolutely is on the list.
For but sure.
The moment that kid goes to sleep on Christmas Eve, you know, you turn that up, like, 11 o'clock, like, you're just watching that.
Well, I'm extra curious now. That's why I separated the two. I can't wait to see next week's Krampus and see how you feel about Krampus and Violent Night. Because Krampus is also very same vein.
Yeah.
It's got a little more scare factor, not like your type of horror. It's not horror at all. It's Adam Scott.
Mean anything.
It is a comedy.
You saying a person that is known for doing comedy stuff does not mean Justin Long.
It is
case
a
proven.
Krampus is a comedy. I bet it's even freaking labeled as a comedy.
It's labeled a horror first, I'm sure.
It's not scary. It's got a couple jump scares.
Yeah. Krampus is just Christmas Babadook.
It is a comedy first, then horror, then fantasy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, moving right along. What else we got?
Well, so Violent Night real quick.
Yeah.
Is this going to be considered a Christmas classic in 10 years?
It depends on the legacy of the movie. Like,
well, because of the continuation, they're making another
second one, which honestly, give me some Nicholas lore. Like,
oh my gosh.
The Viking, like the Nordic side of this, did not expect.
No, that was great. And that hammer.
Oh. Yeah, and I wanted more of it.
Me too. Can you imagine the box office numbers if they did this one, this two, Violent Night 2, and then Violent Night 3, Home Alone, and it's Macaulay Culkin drinking himself like almost to death, and Marv and them come back for revenge. And Santa Claus shows up and he has to team up with Macaulay Culkin to take down Marv and Harry.
No, I don't think I can imagine that.
I can.
Okay.
I am right now.
Yeah, you just, yeah.
And I'm having a great time. But anyway, no, I can't. Abby's actually going to, she's seen enough about this film. She's going to watch it with me this next week. So I'm going to watch it again this next week. It's a gamble. I never know what Abby's going to think about a film, but she's seen, thankfully, my buddy Blake made a Facebook post about this movie the other day. He's like, I forget what people says. Yes, it's violent, but this is a Christmas heartwarming.
Like, yeah, it is.
This has he basically said what I did in different words. Like, this is like the spirit of Christmas in a film. Like, this is the most Christmassy film I've seen in a long time. Like, it's a Christmas film.
It's
full of heart.
It did make my wife almost like she audibly gagged twice during this movie.
There's nothing like that in this film.
There is for her.
Maybe John Leguizamo's death. But
I mean, there was a couple. What are those called? The access to the attic, scene? Like that
with
was
candy cane?
Yeah. Or no, the nail.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
But I loved it.
Yeah, Violent Night's great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. So that brings us to our topic or two. And that is, let's discuss the Golden Globes. I'm gonna list them off to you, man. Best director, Bradley Cooper for Maestro.
Okay.
Celine Song for Past Lives. Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. Greta Gerwig for Barbie. Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon. And Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things. How do you feel? Snubs? I feel like I'm good with that list.
Yeah.
I am really glad I picked Past Lives because that's getting nominated for everything.
The biggest thing about Golden Globes is this is like, you're not going to get a bunch of like big stretches, like big reaches on,
you're going to have
like, this is the populace, choice. Really.
Celine Song is your foreign language here.
Yeah.
And everybody's been saying like, someone needs to tell the Academy and Golden Globe, you can have more than one foreign language in your regular.
What else would you put in there?
Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
And there's another one I haven't seen yet, but everybody's saying it should be in there. Something leaves of something, leaves it all. Or
are you sure that Zone of Interest isn't one of those?
Oh, Zone of Interest is one of those too. Yeah. Yes, that is one. So, who do you think is going to win out of that?
This is Best Director.
Now, granted, I haven't seen, obviously, Maestro or Poor Things.
But this is Best Director.
Yeah.
It's going to be Nolan.
You think so?
Yes.
There's a lot of push right now for Celine Song and Bradley Cooper.
I think there's probably... So, Scorsese wasn't...
No, he's in there.
Yeah, Scorsese, I think, is the... This feels really weird to say, but the dark horse.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully,
this is a stacked year, man.
Yeah.
You got to watch Past Lives. And Maestro comes out next week. So,
yeah,
we'll just see that. All right. Best Motion Picture Animated. The Boy and the Heron. Elemental. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. The Super Mario Brothers movie. Suzumi. And Wish.
I would love for The Boy and the Heron to win, but I think it's Spider-Verse.
It'll probably be Spider-Verse. I actually was voting for the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Okay.
But it won't win, so I'm Spider-Verse as well. I am going to watch Miyazaki's film, so first of the year. Upside.
Okay.
So, Wish actually being a dark horse for me. That animation is very Spider-Man, but not they didn't do Spider-Man. Very different, but yeah, it doesn't have the...
You compare the two, one is obviously better than the other. One of these is not like the other.
Yes, I know. Well, Best Motion Picture Drama. Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Past Lives, The Zone of Interest, Maestro, Oppenheimer. That's brutal. That's a gauntlet.
Drama?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that Oppenheimer has to go up against Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Past Lives, Zone of Interest, and Maestro.
I think it would probably be Killers.
Man, I don't know. I need to see this Zone of Interest in Maestro because they're both getting huge reactions, like 9s and 10s.
Dude, Zone of Interest, I heard it explained this way because there's a lot of like top 10s and like whatever.
Yeah.
One of the reviews that I heard was that this felt like a reality show, not concentration camp, but like in this setting. Like, have you ever watched Big Brother?
Yeah.
It's like, it feels like Big Brother in the sense of like, there's just all these fixed POV cameras and you're just listening in on these conversations and it's super tense. It's super awkward. There's all this.
That feels very on par for Jonathan Glazer.
I don't know what to expect.
Me neither, but I can't wait.
Yeah.
So who's going to win? You said Killers?
If it doesn't win Best Picture.
You don't think it'll win both?
No. Well, because drama...
This is a different, totally different category. That was Best Director last time.
Yeah, but drama is like kind of like its Best Picture because you've got drama, then you got comedy.
Comedy's next, which is where you get Barbie and stuff like that.
So, I think it would be Oppenheimer.
Okay. Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. This is where things get a little odd here. Air, American Fiction, which I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah.
Barbie, The Holdovers, May, December, and Poor Things.
May, December is a comedy. Let's get that straight.
I don't know.
It's comedy.
I'm not that movie.
I laughed out loud more than I did any Tim Allen Christmas movie.
Oh, you're wrong.
I did.
You're wrong.
I woke up Caitlin in the middle of the night because I was laughing so hard.
You still haven't seen Air.
I know.
Or Blackberry.
Blackberry on this list?
No.
Okay.
What I'm saying, but Dawson watched it the other day and I saw like, oh good, he finally watched it. Yeah. He liked it. I can't wait to see Poor Things. And I'm gonna go for the upset here. It's probably gonna be Poor Things. But I'm gonna say The Holdovers.
I would love that. I don't know what to say.
Okay. Best Motion Picture, non-English language. I'm not going to dip into this too far, except for Anatomy of a Fall, Fallen Leaves, Io Capitano, Past Lives, Society of Snow, Zone of Interest. I've seen three of these, which is way better than I normally have seen. This. Normally I have to force myself to watch these.
Yeah.
Society of Snow's on Look Movie. I've meant to watch it about 5 times.
Okay.
And then so is Fallen Leaves. Fallen Leaves is apparently the best one of those to watch, that if you're going to choose a one. But my best guess is Past Lives wins.
Okay. Movie right along.
Best original score. I mean, do you want to go through score? Or do you just want to kind of highlight the best one?
Yeah.
Now, hey, best original song, though. You got freaking 3 Barbie ones nominated.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. You got Peaches also got
Dance
in there.
Dance the Night. Peaches.
Which is Mario, but yeah.
I think I'm Just Ken's going to win.
Okay.
And then Peaches would be my second choice.
Yeah.
But anyway, Here we go. Best performances by a female actor. Oh, wait. That's for a limited series. You don't want to do TV probably right now, do you?
No, I do not want to do TV.
Here you go. Best performance by a female actor in a motion picture. Annette Bening for Naiad. Kaylee Spaney for Priscilla. Carrie Mulligan for Maestro. Greta Lee for Past Lives. Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon. Or Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of the Fall.
Ooh.
I have not seen Naiad. So you think
Margot Robbie did not?
She did. Not for this category. It's a drama.
Oh, this is drama. Okay, shoot. I want to say Greta Lee.
For Past Lives?
Yes, but...
I'm not, actually. I liked her performance. I think it'll be Lily Gladstone from Killers. But Carrie Mulligan, man, some of the stuff I'm seeing, like trailers and stuff, the more I see, she's giving what I think Ana de Armas thought she was giving for Blonde.
Yeah, that's been Cooper's big...
So I think Carrie Mulligan... Push. I think Carrie Mulligan's the dark horse to pull out one right there. Best performance by a female actor in a comedy or musical. Alma Poisty, Fallen Leaves. Emma Stone, Poor Things. Fantasia Barrino, Color Purple. Jennifer Lawrence, No Hard Feelings. Margot Robbie, Barbie. And Natalie Portman, May December. Honestly, Fantasia Barrino is probably going to win this.
Okay. I have no frame of reference.
Color Purple comes out later this year.
Yeah.
Just everything I've seen about it. And we watched a long trailer. It seems very like how Dreamgirls came out of nowhere into the year and swept that one year. This very much feels like it's going to be that same kind of thing.
Wow.
I had it as a stand-in for my Oscars. I kind of wish I had it in my regular because the more I see about it, the more I think it might just do that. If it's not Fantasia, it's probably going to be Margot. I just don't see how it could be, but I think Emma Stone probably does the better performance.
Yeah.
But let's see. You have supporting actresses.
Give me actors. Give me actors in comedy and drama. And let's wrap her up.
Let's see.
I would be interested.
Emma Stone got nominated for The Curse, though.
Yeah, that's what I was honestly about to ask is because Emma Stone's killing it. She's
and your boy got Woody Harrelson from White House Plumbers. He got nominated.
Oh, yeah. I never finished that. Or did I? I can't remember.
Here you go.
It wasn't
best
great.
Performance by a male actor in a motion picture for drama. Andrew Scott, All of Us Strangers, Barry Keoghan, Saltburn, Bradley Cooper, Maestro, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer, Coleman Domingo, Rustin, and Leonardo DiCaprio, Killers of the Flower Moon. It's going to be Bradley Cooper or Cillian Murphy.
It's going to be Cillian Murphy.
And that's so weird to say when Leonardo DiCaprio is the third distant third place.
Yeah, but I think it's been
and there's
pretty...
a huge Andrew Scott grassroots like to Leslie movement for him to win, but he's not going to.
I mean, not the Golden Globes.
No,
this might be a good sign for him an Oscars nom, but yeah, I don't think so.
Best performance by a male actor in motion picture, musical, or comedy: Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. This is the wild. I want this cast to star in a movie.
Okay.
Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. Joaquin Phoenix, Beau Is Afraid. Matt Damon, Air. Nicolas Cage, Dream Scenario. Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers. And Timothée Chalamet, Wonka. It's probably going to go Paul Giamatti.
I can see Jeffrey Wright winning that.
I'm torn between Jeffrey Wright and Matt Damon is great in Air. Like, great in Air.
I feel like the movie's been out too long, though.
Yeah, it depends on recency bias.
Yeah.
I know. Nicolas Cage is great in Dream Scenario.
But I don't know if that many people would have seen it.
I mean, that doesn't necessarily matter because I've seen the most obscure things win. But the fact that we're getting Joaquin Phoenix for Beau Is Afraid and Nicolas Cage for Dream Scenario, what a year.
Yeah.
What a year.
Which are very close to the same movies.
Charles Melton obviously did get I'm just going to mention this one because I think this is the toughest category. Best supporting by a male actor in a supporting role in any motion picture. Charles Melton, May December. Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon. Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer. Ryan Gosling, Barbie. Or Willem Dafoe, Poor Things.
Wow.
That's tough.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and say I wouldn't be surprised if Charles Melton.
I think Downey Jr.'s got it locked.
I wouldn't be surprised if it happens.
I wouldn't either. He's great. Yeah. But I think just for body work wise, in terms of scene for scene blow.
Yeah.
Down Johnny Jr. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to get this going for your TV stuff. You have Succession's nominated for every category on
there. I think every male character was nominated for lead actor.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. And they probably won't win.
No, they won't. They'll cancel each other out. Yeah. It's crazy. But
anyway, so this has been another episode of Mostly Film. We'll be back with you next week. Last one before we take a break for Christmas and breaking down the next five movies, which are Krampus. Hang on. Krampus, Home Alone 2, Spirited, and It's a Wonderful Life. And then for me, The Santa Claus. And for you, Family Man.
Yeah, which we'll talk about.
So, yeah. Can't wait. I'm also going to sneak in, I think, Gremlins.
Okay.
Well, I almost watched it last night.
Yeah.
So, we'll be back next week. I hope you've enjoyed what you're listening to. This has been an episode of Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of cinema. We'll see you next week, guys. Bye.
Bye.